All right. Jim, will you get those lights back here for me? I just want to say good morning, and I've had the privilege over the last 22 years of going to Jamaica and being not only an ambassador for Christ, but also as an opportunity to carry the work of this congregation over there. So my goal this morning is to share with you the work, to encourage you in what's been going on there, to encourage you in the truth as well, but also to help you to see and be reminded that the work that we do over there is a work that this congregation has supported and made possible. And even though there's always a limited number of us that go there from this congregation, your hands and your hearts are there as well. And I hope that you can see that in what we discuss today. So teaching, encouraging, and just getting things rolling again, that really is what this year was all about. We're always teaching and encouraging, but we've been doing this for a while, and everything's kind of gone as usual. But just give you a quick rundown of the history here. This is July 2000. You probably see some faces you recognize there. Aaron and me and Crystal and Russ Bradshaw, Jen, now Bradshaw, Jen Kralitz at the time, all went from this congregation. I'll fly through this. There's some pictures of some young people here. I don't have a picture from every year, but just to kind of give you an idea of how long we've been doing this, the kids went with us as soon as they were born. We've always felt like that it was important to show that family model to the Jamaicans, let them see what it is to have a father and a mother together raising their children. Sometimes they were having a good time. Sometimes they were just worn out. There's a picture. You probably noticed some other faces. There's a Townsend and a Kennard in that picture. I can't remember if they were married at that point or not. Missy will straighten me out on that later, I'm sure. But 2010, they went with us from the congregation here. And you see, there's always been helping. That's one of the coolest things about this trip has been raising our kids up with this idea that they are fellow workers in Christ. Even before they were Christians, they were working and helping, being a part of what was going on there, not just passengers, not just spectators. One of Harrison's favorite things to do there is to eat the fruit, so might have a few pictures of that. And then 2019, we had Jenny and Joey with us. We were encouraging some of the kids to sing and participate in VBS. And then COVID hit. And so because of COVID, we really have had essentially a three-year unwanted break. It's always a year between trips for me and for the family. But with COVID happening, it really just shut everything down. I think we can probably see what that was like. And so when 2022 rolled around, I obviously was ready to go back. I think the family and many others were ready to go back. I received some important encouragement from some others here that said, it's time to go back. But we weren't sure when we could return. When January 2022 came around, things were looking a lot better, but we weren't sure how it was going to go, what it was going to look like. What would a return be, and how would we do it? Would the governments allow it? And even as in 2022, when it first came, we were looking at, okay, the Jamaican government requires us to have a clear bill of health to go. The U.S. government requires a clear bill of health to come back. And so we weren't even sure if we might go and then get stuck, get sequestered in some type of a holding area because we didn't pass, or maybe get stuck over there, not able to come back. But fortunately, a lot of that worked its way out just before the trip, after we were committed to go. Would the Jamaicans want it? When you stop something for 2 years, when something as big as COVID comes around, you start to really, think through that. I really have to have a finger on the pulse of whether the Jamaicans are ready for this. We didn't want to force them into anything they weren't ready for. Could it be done safely? Could it be done in a way that I could feel good about leading other people over there and giving them some relatively firm assurance that everything was going to be okay? And then would an American team buy in? Because we know that COVID's affected a lot of people here, and everybody's got kind of a different perspective and viewpoint on it, and we wanted to make sure that we could get that, get everybody on board. So about April of this year, I sent a letter to, and you're not supposed to be able to see it, it's just there was a letter, it's back there. But I sent a letter to some of the veterans and said, you know, it's time to get this going again. I think we need to go with a smaller group. We need to just try to be more targeted. But we've got to get some boots on the ground there to start to give everybody the confidence that this work can resume. We can get this going again. Everybody's like, yeah, let's do that. So that's what we did. So the trip looked a lot different this year. As opposed to having, you know, 20 to 30 people like we've had in the past, we took 9 people. I think we had planned to take 10 and somebody, maybe 11, and 2 got sick. And so we ended up with 9 people. We were there for only 7 days, so we wanted to make it a little bit shorter this year, so at least you know, if you had to bail out early, it wasn't that early. You could make it through a week, hopefully. We still were able to work with 3 local churches. We still visited basically 4 major areas to encourage people. The goals, essentially, is what we started with, to encourage Christians. We wanted to go over there and remind Christians that no matter what this world's throwing at you, we still got to live godly. To teach the gospel, take it to those people that have never heard it before, still continue to evangelize those neighborhoods, build confidence in the continuation of the work, and just get the ball rolling again. And I feel like that's exactly what we did. So obviously, we start here in Middleburg. We drove down to Orlando, flew out from Orlando International, landed in Sankster International in Montego Bay, Jamaica. That is Crystal's view out the window. And this is Crystal with her support team, and the sunglasses, I think, help her to cope a little bit. So she again managed another trip there and back without getting us arrested or anything like that for running up and down the aisles of the plane. Surprisingly, when we got there, you know, we didn't know what to expect. We weren't sure if their economy was just going to be decimated, how that was going to look. But surprisingly, things really looked a lot better. We saw a lot of people working, a lot of businesses open. They weren't at full capacity, but the economy was moving along and doing quite well. Just to kind of give you a visual of the areas, that's Mo Bay where we first land. We worked in Grange Hill, which is, you know, shown by that little pin drop there. Savannah Lamar, which is, again, not far from Grange Hill, but it's kind of a drive through the mountains that you can't really see there on this map. And then Alligator Pond, that's where Marlon used to live and where his family still lives. And so we got to visit all of those folks while we were there. The Christians of all the areas that we visited, Mo Bay, Sav, Grange Hill, they all wanted us to send their greeting back. They're so appreciative that we're coming and doing this that the Americans saw the value in investing in them. And there's a couple of faces here that you may not recognize, but we're going to show you for just a second. That is George Medley and his wife Jemima. And I think that name probably rings a bell. Many people here have individually supported them as Jemima's been dealing with cancer. And the congregation as a whole gave them some support too. And they took me off to the side and just got hold of my hand and said, just please tell the brethren back in Middleburg how appreciative we are. You know, Jemima would not have survived to this point, most likely, if it weren't for the help of people in this congregation and other Christians that were willing to help them financially to get the procedure she needed. So they're very, very thankful. All right, Jamaica is definitely a caution, enter at your own risk kind of a place. It's a third world country. If you expect to go over there and see what you see in the States, you're not going to see much of that unless you're on a resort. It's very different, just government structure, climate, not all in bad ways, just very different. So we stayed in a gated community. Here we are driving up towards the guard shack. There's our guard shack. Here's the gate. Here's the guards coming out to greet us. And, oh, by the way, they're Jamaican military. And we weren't in a gated community. We were actually inside of a neighborhood that was experienced an enhanced security zone, as they call it, where every place you come in, there's a military with M16s. And it's basically because crime had gotten so bad there. So we stayed in an Airbnb, and it looked great. You know, we looked at it online, and it was nice. It all worked out. But I guess you could look at it one of two ways. Either we were staying in an area that had such a high crime rate that they decided to put armed guards around it, or you could say it was a gated community. But everything was fine. We felt safe the whole time, had a wonderful host that took care of us. And really, you know, lodging is always a challenge there. There's been many, many years where we've had lodging squared away, and then you get there, and they're like, oh, yeah, your rooms are gone. or we don't have as many rooms, or the price just went up, you know, a time and a half of what we told you, or two times, whatever. And we've really had a lot of struggles. So as far as that goes, we just went in and stayed. It was no problem at all. So it was a good thing in that regard. Jamaica has we tend to think about the beaches and the sand and the ocean and all that, but Jamaica has a lush interior as well, and everything grows everywhere there. They just have a 365-day growing season. That's just a couple of the fruits that you probably won't see here: a sweet sop and a Tahitian pear, or as they call them, apples. And here's a field full of chives, and this is where we go over to Alligator Pond and visit Marlon's family. There's just things growing. The soil is just so fertile and rich everywhere you go. That's something they call Bamboo Avenue, and it's about 2 or 3 kilometers of just this, you know, this tunnel of bamboo that must have been planted, you know, who knows how many hundreds of years ago. Here's one that's for Daryl and Missy. These bananas growing like weeds. You know, essentially this is right by the church building, just a little crack between some concrete. Here's a banana plant coming out. It's got an enormous crop of bananas just hanging there, and you know, nobody has to take care of it. It just does its thing. It's rainy there, and we had some rain this year. I just wanted to kind of give you a little picture of the roads, and you know, the forests are continually encroaching on the roads. So I'm not sure how wide the roads actually are, but by the time the trees and everything hang over, it's pretty narrow sometimes. That's a Jamaican water heater. And so if you get a shower in the daytime, you're likely to have a good warm shower, but a lot of times you get a shower at night. Sun's gone down, the black tank is no longer heating, and you have to deal with a cold shower. This is one of our friends that we get to see there every year, and some of you may have seen this video already, but just to watch her hand, she is braiding, or as they say, plaiting these fronds off of a palm tree. And I mean, she's literally braiding that right now. And it took her about 30 seconds maybe to do that whole thing. And I told her afterwards, I said, that probably would have taken me about 30 minutes or maybe a day or something. But this is her job. She braids themselves dries themselves into the resorts. That's how she makes her money. Here's Harrison having to take the floor seat. You know, one of the unique things about Jamaica and the Jamaican experience is that sometimes we have to put somebody on the floor. There's just not always enough seats in the van, so he was volunteering for the floor seat that day. We drank a lot of water while we were there. It's hot. You got to stay hydrated. Some have learned those lessons in the past that you got to stay hydrated. There's a Jamaican carpool. We're driving through the mountains where, I mean, just winding roads and narrow roads and trees that are sometimes smacking the top of the van. And this van was truck was following us. With you know, these guys just as cool as could be hanging on there. I don't know if everybody can see that or not, but we rode by, you know, a store and saw not just a help wanted sign, but a male help wanted sign. So you wouldn't see that in America. It's kind of unique to see that, but their culture is very different. They're very straightforward. If they wanted male help, they would just say, we want a male to work here, not a female. And they're very, very free with that type of communication, and doesn't seem to offend anybody. It's just the way that it is. Speaking of help wanted, sometimes the seatbelts fall off in the van, and there's Addison putting the Miss Tant's seatbelt back together in the van while I was inside taking care of something else. Had to do a little bit of emergency rescue while we were there. This lady fell off of a curb and broke her ankle right there in the middle of town, and we had to help load her into a bus so she could get to the hospital. This is probably a common thought when we think about Jamaica, the Rasta. I thought it was interesting that Greg chose to talk about Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. Rastas it's actually a religion. A lot of people don't realize that's not just like kind of a lifestyle with dreadlocks. It's a religion. And they actually believe that the Lion of the Tribe of Judah came from something, that some lineage from Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, rather than it being Christ. And so the old Rastas are very, very cool and relaxed, and they usually are easy to talk to. The younger ones a lot of times are pretty aggressive and don't want to talk to you and be nice. For some reason, I was told to stand in front of this sign. It's a jerk zone. I stood there for the picture. So jerk zone, you see these signs, jerk station, jerk zone, and I can't pull off to all of them. But, you know, it's just you know, the way where they serve jerk chicken or jerk pork. Logistics. My wheelhouse. So we had a pretty pretty busy schedule this year. Maybe not as busy as what it is some years because we have more people and a lot more moving around. But we pretty much had the mornings free, and then we set up our classes and our worship to be together in the evening. We tried to limit because we really didn't have any idea what gas prices were going to be like, what it was going to be like to rent vans and all that kind of stuff. So we tried to limit travel by putting things together. So our VBS was smaller. We didn't bus people in. We got the word out through the Christians to tell those people they knew. So usually we go drop, you know, leaflets and pamphlets in all the neighborhoods around. This year it was like, hey, let's just keep it small enough so that the nine of us can manage it. So classes, VBS, and then a congregational gathering in the evenings, or really in the afternoon, I should say. Brand new Jamaican DMV. I got to renew my driver's license. It expired, you know, thanks to COVID, so I had to get my Jamaican CDL renewed, and it's exactly the same as you would imagine it to be here in the States. Preaching and teaching, the real reason that we went. That is the goal. Harrison got on the rooftops to shout the message. That's the building there. Some of you that remember the history a little bit more, a lot of us probably helped out, whether it was, you know, direct contributions or however you supported that to get the church building in Montego Bay built. So they no longer meet in a rented facility, and it's just so much better for them. They're doing so much more as a group now that they have a place to call their own. Everything's concrete there, so the termites don't eat it. And this is right there off of the road, so you have enough room to pull in and just park there. And so, you know, it's a very small, rocky yard around the building. This is the Grange Hill building. I got to preach there, got to preach in both places, actually, and deliver messages. We talked about God's family and how important it is that we just follow God's pattern for family. We don't listen to what this world tells us about it, but we take God's pattern for what it is. We had, you know, classes look a little different there. You just turn around and work on the pew like a table when it's time for classes. You see Crystal sitting there on the floor with her group of elementary school kids. And Harrison helped out with the elementary kids a lot. And it's something, you know, just to, like I said earlier, our kids have grown up participating and working in it. And the older they get, the more they do, the more they participate in a helpful fashion. So Harrison helps to guide those kids, keep them on task, and helps to just you know, be that example in the class for them. There's another shot kind of crammed into a little room there at the building. Again, Addison, you know, we have these handouts that we give the kids that are meant for them to help follow along with the sermon or the lesson when we're in the full classroom. So rather than the kids just sitting there, they actually have, you know, a place they can write down words that they've heard, verses they've been asked to turn to. So Addison and Harrison and some of the others are very helpful in handing out those papers and getting the kids engaged so they can get more out of it. Friends and brethren, which, you know, in Jamaica is pronounced brethren. The cool thing about going for all this time is that our kids have been able to grow up with a lot of the kids there. And Malia's sitting there, so this is actually a picture of Malia, but not you, Malia. So you have Malia, somebody we've always called Miss Chen, but her name is actually Marissa, and then Addison. Something I should tell you is that the Jamaicans have what they call pet names, and we might say nicknames, but they're much more serious about pet names than we are about nicknames. So you might know somebody for 10 or 15 or 20 years, you know, by Brian or something, then you realize that their real name is Romario, and that Brian is just their pet name, and you've never actually known their real name. So it's kind of a neat cultural thing that they have there. But so I don't know Malia's pet name, but that's Miss Chen. This is Marlon's family. They now live in the house where Marlon used to live. We were able to go over there and sing with them and have a Bible lesson with them and just encourage them. They're you know, kind of stuck where they are in some ways, and they go to worship with a group there that's an institutional group in the area, but they don't have the full support of, you know, of a local church. This is Alligator Pond, the farthest, you know, the most remote area that we go to visit. They don't have the full support like many of the others that we work with have, as far as just a group to encourage them and to feed them. Same thing with Harrison. He's gotten to grow up with these boys and gotten to know them and just really have some great relationships. And they get to strengthen each other and remind each other that, you know, whether I'm in the States or you're in Jamaica, we all need to keep living right and serve God. So really cool dynamic that's developed there over the years. This is a picture of the gathering there at Mo Bay in the church building, kind of looking from the side. That's a good approximation for the numbers that we were seeing in the evenings between VBS and the worship service and the group classes. And there's, again, a couple of friends that Harrison only gets to see once a year. And you know, it's been a privilege to me to be able to raise our kids in this environment and to be able to let them be a part of this. And you can see they take the time to do what any of us would be doing, to listen to the little kids, to hear what they have to say, to try to be a good example for them. And here's Harrison, you know, spending some time with some kids. And I probably should have warned you there'll be dad jokes, but some of you probably knew well enough there'd be some dad jokes involved. This year, because we had a smaller group and because the work was a little more focused and we didn't have, we weren't doing as much on such a big scale, it gave us a little bit more time for social time with the Jamaicans. And going back to, you know, kind of what I started with, we didn't really know what to expect. We didn't know if they were going to be 100% in masks, if they were going to be comfortable with us being there. We knew what our contacts had told us, that, yeah, come on, we're comfortable, we're good. But you never know until you start to meet everybody, how they feel. And so we saw a blend. We saw some people that were wearing masks, some people that were nervous at first, some that were wearing masks when we first got there, but then by day two, the mask had disappeared. Some people that were very concerned that some of us had not been vaccinated, some of us that didn't really care. There were some that thought that maybe they had been sold a bill of goods by their government, and some that thought it was absolutely necessary to be vaccinated. So not very different than Florida, the States, anywhere. Everybody really had their own opinion. So we wanted to have at least some social time to get together with them, just to again spend time physically in the same space and make sure that we were all seeing that, hey, this works, this can be done. So we got to give some of the little kids a treat. Got to do a little ice cream thing with some of them. That was you know, just our own out-of-pocket thing that we did. Got to put on some hair seminars. If you have long hair in Jamaica, and this is not a problem that we all have, but if you have long hair in Jamaica, somebody's going to approach you about braiding it. It's just they love the working with hair, braiding with hair. To me, I look at it and say, why would you want to spend 3 hours? But they'll get up early in the morning and spend 2 or 3 hours, and there'll be a team, sometimes 4 or 5 women collected around a little girl or somebody just plaiting their hair, plaiting or getting it ready for the day or for the week. So, of course, when they see long hair, they want to jump right on that. Again, here's Addison and Marissa. They've just really, it's been difficult for them to communicate over the years. Sometimes it's a challenge. Just to be able to communicate through phones because it's expensive. It's hard for them to communicate back with us, especially, and it even costs them money sometimes if we try to communicate with them. So every time they get to see each other, they're just like, this is the greatest thing in the world, because they have a hard time getting in contact with one another throughout the year. I think we've got that worked out this year. I think it's getting better. Here's a shot of George Slover. Some of you that have been here a long, long time may remember that, you know, George has been a part of this work for quite a while. He came and preached here for us many, many years ago. And that is Marlon's parents that he's sitting in between there in Alligator Pond. And that's the, you know, just kind of a shot of some of the young folks and some of the folks we've known for the past 22 years or so, some of them, the ones that are old enough to be known that long. So the presentation is a little bit shorter this year because the work was not as tremendous. We didn't have as many faces to introduce you to. But I don't want that to take away from the importance or the nature of the work and how appreciative we are that we were able to do this. Again, financially, it's a burden for any one individual to try to take this on themselves to go and do it. And frankly, I don't really think it would be fair if we just tried to do this on our own. It wouldn't be fair to you guys because we'd be taking an opportunity away from you. So I hope that you guys feel a connection with the Jamaican work. I hope that you see that it's through your generosity, it's through your love that we're able to go over there and preach the gospel and encourage them. And so this year was a bit of a reset, a bit of a restarting, but a necessary one. And we hope and we plan, and we left everybody behind with the opinion that, yeah, we can come back next year and we can go into those neighborhoods and we can drag out the kids and we can have 100 and 150 kids at these VBSs again and try to reach those people that wouldn't be reached otherwise. And that really is what it's all about. That we just, you know, wherever we find souls that don't know God, that haven't heard the gospel, we need to try to reach them. And I've just been blessed to number one, hear about this work. Number two, be, you know, naive enough or whatever you want to call it to say yes the first time somebody asked me to go. And I should share that story with you real quick. That in 2000, Jeff Harwood was the preacher here. He's passed on now. But he came to me and Crystal. We had just gotten back from a vacation with my parents. And we weren't married at the time. He came to me and Crystal and said, there's this really great opportunity for this work in Jamaica. I just got a call from a guy named David Tant. And I've known David for years, and he's looking for workers. You know, are you guys interested? And we said, yeah, that sounds great. When is it? And he's like, it's like 2 weeks. Okay, so like he didn't have to have a passport then, but we were in. And he says, and by the way, you two are going, and I'm not. So, you know, Godspeed. And that's how we got into it. You know, we just jumped right in, and it has just grabbed hold of us. It is the work, the people there. The ease with which they converse with one another, their openness to discuss things just really, really grabbed hold of us and got us interested in it. And thankfully, it has grabbed hold of this congregation. It's been something that you guys have been interested in long term, and we really appreciate that. Can't say enough to say how valuable your prayers are, how valuable your support is, how valuable it is when somebody says, you're doing a good thing over there, and keep doing it. Don't get lazy. Don't get tired, just keep it up. We really appreciate that. So thank you guys very much for that. Mark 16:15. We're kind of moving into the tapering down in our thoughts this morning. And Jesus said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. You know, I guess there's a lot of things you could think about taking into all the world. I guess if you're a salesman, your goal is to take that product into all the world and to get everybody to want one. So with the gospel, I think the important question is why? Why do we take the gospel into all the world? Why is it important that everybody hears? This verse here is probably the best answer to that question. It's probably one of the more important verses we could understand about the gospel. That the gospel is literally God's power to salvation. And if we want to look somewhere else for God's power to salvation, we'll look under this rock or look in this book, it's just not there. The only way that you and I have been saved, the only way that people can be saved is by hearing the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news that is explained here in Romans chapter 5, that God demonstrates his own love toward us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That God reached out to a bunch of sinners. He didn't look for the best of us. He reached out to anybody who would see his son, believe in him, and be willing to change his life because of that sacrifice. What an amazing thought process God had to formulate that plan. And so that's why we want to take the gospel to the world, because just like we needed it, everybody needs to understand that if we're willing to believe in God, repent, and be baptized, that we can be saved, that we can receive that salvation that God intended for everybody to enjoy. Ephesians 2:13, but now in Christ Jesus, you who once were afar off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. I think that speaks in so many ways to our discussion today. That number one, the Jamaicans are far off geographically, but in Christ we are together. If you're a Christian in Australia, I'm told that's the other side of the world. That's what I've heard my whole life. If you're a Christian in Australia, if you're a Christian in America, if you're a Christian who has passed on into eternity, we are all brought near in Christ. And for each one of us individually who has sinned, who has separated ourselves from God, who's tarnished the good thing that God created me as, we can be brought back close to him through Christ. That's the good news. That's the message we take there. That's the message I hope everybody in this room either understands or is starting to get a glimpse of here this morning. That precious message has to reach everybody in order for anybody to be saved. So the question for you to think about as we close here is, are you accessing God's power for salvation? Not just do you have access to it, but are you accessing it? Do you treat the gospel as the precious thing that it is? Are you allowing that story of Christ, that wonderful story of love, to change you each day? Have you committed yourself to serve God through His Son, Jesus? Have you been baptized into His death? If the answer is no to any of those questions, we want to help you. If you're a Christian, we want to help bring you closer to God. If you're not a Christian, we want to help you to get into Christ by studying with you, by offering you an opportunity to be baptized. If there's anything we can do to help you get closer to God, please come forward as we stand.